デバヤ。
オノバデバヤ。
ナモバゲベテイバスデバヤ。
オノバデバスデバヤ。
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 71, The Lord Travels to Indraprastha. Text number 22. Tamatulayam parirabhya nirvitro.
Tamatulayam parirabhya nirvitro.
Tamatulayam parirabhya nirvitro.
Tamatulayam parirabhya nirvitro.
Bhimasmayan premajala kulendriya.
Bhimasmayan premajala kulendriya.
Bhimasmayam premajala kulendriya.
Bhimasmayam premajala kulendriya.
Yamo kirti cha suhirtamam muda.
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 Vrida bashpa parire vire chitam. Vrida bashpa parire vire chitam.
Vrida bashpa parire vire chitam.
Tamatulayam parirabhya nirvrto.
Tamatulayam parirabhya nirvrto.
Bhimasmayan prema jalu jala kulendriya.
Bhimasmayan prema jala kulendriya.
Yamo kiriti cha suhita mamuda.
Yamo kiriti cha suhita mamuda.
Pavrida bashpa parire bire chutam.
Pavrida bashpa parire
Tamatulayam parirabhya nirvrto.
Tamatulayam parirabhya nirvrto.
Bhimasmayan premajala kulendriya.
Bhimasmayan premajala kulendriya.
Yamo kirti cha suhirtamam muda.
Yamo kirti cha suhirtamam muda.
Pravritta bashpa parire vire chutam.
Pravritta bashpa parire vire chutam.
Tamatulayam parirabhya nirvrto.
Tamatulayam parirabhya nirvrto.
Bhimasmayan prema jala kulendriya.
Bhimasmayan prema jala kulendriya.
Yeah.
through the word for word. Tam.
Tam.
Him.
Him.
Matulayam.
Matulayam.
His mother's brother's son.
His mother's brother's son.
Parirabhya.
Parirabhya.
Embracing.
Embracing.
Nevrita.
Nevrita.
Filled with joy.
Filled with joy.
Bhima.
Bhima.
Bhimasain.
Bhimasain.
Samyan.
Samyan.
Laughing.
Laughing.
Prema.
Prema.
Due to love.
Due to love.
Jala.
Jala.
With the water.
With the water.
Tears.
Tears.
Akula.
Akula.
Filled.
Filled.
Indriya.
Indriya.
Whose eyes.
Whose eyes.
Yamo.
Yamo.
The twins Nakula and Sahadev.
The twins Nakula and Sahadev.
Kiriti.
Kiriti.
Arjuna.
Arjuna.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Suhitamam.
Suhitamam.
Their dearmost friend.
Their dearmost friend.
Muda.
Muda.
With pleasure.
With pleasure.
Pravrida.
Pravrida.
Profuse.
Profuse.
Bashpa.
Bashpa.
Whose tears.
Whose tears.
Parirebere.
Parirebere.
They embraced.
They embraced.
Chutam.
Chutam.
The infallible Lord.
Infallible Lord.
Translation by Disciples of His Divine Grace, E.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Then Bhima, his eyes brimming with tears, laughed with joy as he embraced his maternal cousin Krishna. Arjuna and the twins, Nakula and Sahadev, also joyfully embraced their dearmost friend, the infallible Lord, and they cried profusely. Text number 28. After Arjuna had embraced him once more, and Nakula and Sahadev had offered him their obeisances, Lord Krishna bowed down to the brahmanas and the elders present, thus properly honouring the respectable members of the Kuru, Srinjaya and Kaikeya clans. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami mentions that since Arjuna was considered Lord Krishna's social equal, when Arjuna tried to bow down to him, Lord Krishna held Arjuna by his arms so that he could only embrace him. The twins, however, being junior cousins, bowed down and grasped Lord Krishna's feet. Amagana Timanandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksho Ummitam Yena Tasma Shri Gurve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudeva Gaurava Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. Then Bhima, his eyes brimming with tears, laughed with joy as he embraced his maternal cousin Krishna. Arjuna and the twins, Nakula and Sahadev, also joyfully embraced their dearmost friend, the infallible Lord, and they cried profusely. So this is the transcendental ecstasy of the Pandavas. They're finally realizing their plan to bring Krishna back to Indraprastha. Krishna had been residing in Dwaraka for several months. Previous that, he had actually been visiting Indraprastha and was staying with Pandavas in Indraprastha city. At that time, also a lot of the Yadavas, or the Yadus, had come to stay in Indraprastha city also with the Pandavas as their guests. They'd all left and Krishna had stayed on for several months with the Pandavas, so he could associate with them. And at that time, that is when Arjuna and Krishna had saved the demon Maya from the fire, which was being caused by Agnidev in the Kandava forest. And the Kandava forest was Agnidev at the time was feeling a bit of indigestion from all these ghee ablations that had been offered to him in different yajnas. So in the Kandava forest there were various herbs which would help Agnidev to digest the ghee. So at that time, when the forest was burnt by Agnidev, Arjuna and Krishna had saved the demon Maya Danava. And because this demon Maya Danava was very grateful to Arjuna and Krishna for saving him, he wanted to render some service to them. Krishna requested Maya to build the wonderful council house for the Pandavas. What was the name of the meeting house that they built? It's called the Maya Shamba, I think it was, which is a wonderful assembly hall which Maya Dhanava had built for the Pandavas. Of course, Maya Dhanava was a daitya. He was the architect for the demons and was capable of building wonderful palatial buildings. So on Krishna's request, he built this very beautiful, very wonderful, opulent assembly house, the Maya Shamba. So it was in this assembly house when it was being inaugurated by the Pandavas in Yudhishthira, the big opening ceremony for this wonderful palace. And also, it's explained that this palace, anyone who was, it was built in such a way with the architecture that had a piece of a lake in it, like a small pond. And anyone who's envious of the Pandavas wouldn't see the water. So, of course, we know later on the famous pastime when Duryodhan walked into the palace, and because he's very, very envious of all of the Pandavas, he couldn't see this body of water, because those who were envious would see the water as land. So, of course, at that time, Duryodhan walked into the palace, and not seeing this body of water, fell into it, and became covered in water. So his anger and rage and envy of the Pandavas increased manyfold. And it's explained at that time that was actually the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. That was what was the catalyst for the beginning of the war against the Pandavas, because Draupadi was laughing at him, and some of the other Pandavas had laughed at Duryodhan when he fell into the water. And of course, Duryodhan, being very, very proud, couldn't tolerate being laughed at. Yudhishthira was also saw this happen, and he was saying to him, "No, don't laugh, you'll make him very, very angry." But Draupadi, they all laughed, and he became very angry. So this is the catalyst which brought about the battle at Kurukshetra. So it was quite an important place, this Maya Shamba, this assembly house built by Maya Dhanava. It was all during this inauguration ceremony that Narada Muni had actually appeared into the assembly hall. So the Pandavas all greeted Narada Muni with great respect and great reverence, and Yudhishthira worshipped him very, very nicely, just like we're reading today, how the Pandavas experiencing this ecstasy of meeting Lord Krishna face to face. Bhima, his eyes brimming with tears, and as Bhima saying, the most powerful of all warriors, huge, powerful, tall, like his thighs as big as elephants, enormous, powerful warrior, but his eyes are brimming with tears upon seeing Krishna. And also the twins Nakula and Sahadev also are ecstatic upon seeing this darshan of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's come to be with them in Indraprastha city. So back in this assembly hall, during this inauguration ceremony, Krishna wasn't present during this inauguration ceremony, but Narada Muni had appeared, and Yudhishthira greeted him very nicely and then began to inquire from him, "Where have you been? Where have your travels been? Can you tell us about some of your travels throughout the universe?" So Narada Muni was relaying to him his different travels to the higher planetary systems in Swarga Loka, where Yamaraj resided, in Brahma Loka, and is giving nice descriptions of all these planetary systems of the demigods in Swarga Loka. So the Pandavas are all wrapped in attention, listening to these wonderful descriptions. That could have been maybe why Maharaj Yudhishthira wanted a beautiful assembly house, because he heard these wonderful descriptions of the palatial buildings in the heavenly planets. So Narada Muni, upon being questioned by Yudhishthira, also wanted to know how Pandu was going, their father. How is our father Pandu? Where is he residing? So Pandu was residing, I think it was in Indra's abode in the heavenly planets. And Pandu had relayed a message onto Narada Muni that he desired for Yudhishthira Maharaj to perform this Rajasuya sacrifice. So Pandu, obviously being the father of the Pandavas, wanted his son Yudhishthira to perform this Rajasuya sacrifice, not so much for Yudhishthira's own gain and benefit, so he could become a powerful king, but the real reason behind performing the Rajasuya sacrifice is so that Krishna could be glorified. Because we know in the Rajasuya sacrifice, the most prominent personality in the assembly during the Rajasuya sacrifice is given first worship. So the Pandavas and Yudhishthira, realizing that this would obviously be Krishna, so Yudhishthira was he was a preacher actually. He wanted to preach the glories of Lord Krishna. He wanted Krishna to be given the topmost worship and establish Krishna as the most powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this was his desire for building this wonderful palace and performing the Rajasiri's sacrifice. So Narada Muni relayed this message of Pandu that you should perform this Rajasiri sacrifice for the glorification of Krishna, and also to the desire of Pandu. So upon hearing this instruction, Yudhisthira began deliberating, we need to perform this Rajasiri sacrifice. We're going to have to bring Krishna back to Indraprastha city. Krishna had left several months beforehand. Also during that time when they burnt the Kandava forest, also that is when Arjuna had married Krishna's sister, Subhadra. So obviously they were very, very close in terms of not just being devotees, but also in terms of the family connection they had with Krishna. So after Krishna had left and was back in Dwarka, that was at the time that the king's messenger had come to see Krishna and is relaying this message that, look, Jarasandha, king of Magadha, he has imprisoned something like 10,000 kings. 20,000 kings. This is how powerful Jarasandha was. Jarasandha was also related to Kamsa. He was a great friend of Kamsa, and he was very, very angry that his friend and relative, Kamsa, had been killed by Krishna. Very, very angry. This is why he tried attacking Krishna something like 17 times, because he's so angry with Krishna. Because this is a saying, great minds think alike. So Jarasandha was very like-minded with Kamsa. Both were very, very envious of Krishna, and their whole mission in life was to kill Krishna. Kill him. I don't want this Krishna. I want to be the supreme. I'm the most powerful. Kill this Krishna. This is Jarasandha's whole life mission. So when this king, actually the messenger was one of these kings who had been imprisoned by Jarasandha, and he had managed to escape from this cave that they had been imprisoned in. So this king had escaped and had come to see Krishna in Dwarka, and was relaying this message on behalf of all the kings, saying, look, we're imprisoned here, we realise that we are subservient to you, please come and help us. No one else can save us apart from you. Jarasandha is so powerful, no other personality can protect us apart from you. So the kings took shelter of Krishna. So this is to their great credit that they actually took shelter of Krishna, realising that Krishna possibly was the supreme personality of Godhead. Because not everybody knew that Krishna was the supreme personality of Godhead. Even when Krishna was present 5,000 years ago, not everybody realised that he was the supreme personality of Godhead. Only his most intimate devotees realised that he was the supreme. This is another reason why Maharaj Yudhisthira wanted to perform this Rajasiri sacrifice, so he could actually establish it in front of everybody that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Because we read further on when we're coming up to it, when the Rajasiri sacrifice is performed, and it is time, I think it was called the Agra Puja, or the Puja, or the worship of the most respectable person in the assembly. So we read that the personalities from the universe, from all over the universe, where there are great demigods, great sages, great rishis were present, but they were deliberating amongst themselves of who should be given first worship. Should it be Shiva? Should it be Lord Brahma? Should it be this rishi, that sage? Who should it be? So it was not until Sahadev spoke about the glories of Krishna that they realised Krishna is the most worshipful personality and should be given the first puja. So back in Dwarka, with this messenger king relaying this message to Krishna, we were reading in the last chapter how, on this great plea, Krishna became very merciful to him, and all of the Yadus also began plotting, we need to get rid of this Jarasandha, we need to protect these kings, Jarasandha's become too powerful, he's completely demoniac, we must make a plan to try and get rid of him. So it was just at this time that they were deliberating in this way how to kill Jarasandha that Narada Muni appeared. He'd come from Indraprastha just after instructing the Pandavas to perform the Rajasiri sacrifice. Upon leaving there, he came to visit Krishna in Dwarka. So he appeared in the assembly house of Krishna. Krishna just at this time, and they were deliberating about how to kill Jarasandha. So Krishna once again greeted Narada Muni very nicely, as once again we're reading here how Krishna was greeting the Pandavas. So we understand that Krishna, even though he's the supreme personality of Godhead, he's acting in the role of an ordinary human being. So therefore he's following the etiquettes and customs of Vedic culture very nicely. We see here how Arjuna, being his equal, Krishna didn't allow Arjuna to bow down before him. He embraced him, actually, as an equal. Whereas the twins Nakula and Sahadev, Krishna allowed them to bow down before him. And Krishna also bows down before the other members, the elder members of the Kuru dynasty. So in this way, Krishna is acting in the role of a normal human being. So we can see in contemporary culture, no one knows actually how to behave properly. No one has been taught the culture or etiquette of how to interact with other human beings properly. We can see now that young people have no respect for the older people. And because the younger people don't respect the older people don't respect the younger people. So in a proper culture, we're being educated through the Bhagavatam, even through Krishna's own example, how to behave properly within human society. Now, how a cultured civilization actually behaves. So it's very, very educational how to actually associate properly, because within Vedic culture and also within Vaishnava culture, there's a way of dealing with different devotees. In the Nectar of Devotion and Nectar of Instruction, it gives us nice understandings about how to interact with different levels of devotees. So one has to understand the different grades of devotees in order to associate with them properly. Obviously, one who is more senior and more advanced than us, then we have to explain that we should serve them. We should offer nice service to them and be very respectful towards older devotees, especially those sannyasis and so forth. Devotees have been in the movement for a long, long time. Devotees who are an equal level with us, then we create friendships with those devotees and we associate with them in the way according to the Nectar of Instruction, with the loving exchanges. And then for people who are new Vaishnavas, who are just new learning the philosophy and culture and so forth, then we're merciful to them. So in all circumstances, we're a servant. But according to the relationships, then we serve according to that dynamic within that relationship for new devotees, devotees who are equal with you, and older devotees. So in this way, it creates a very harmonious culture and society when people understand their position and understand their position in relationship to other devotees as well. And of course, it doesn't mean if someone is an older devotee, they become proud by saying, just look at me, I've been in the movement for 6 whole months. I'm a senior Vaishnava now, 6 months, 1 year in the movement. Everyone should be worshipping very nicely, serving me. And in all cases, a devotee is always meditating, I'm a servant. You're always a servant, whatever circumstance you're in, whether you've been in the movement for 5 years, 6 months, 20 years, you're always a servant. So, of course, the service role may change according to your advancement in Krishna consciousness, but in all times and circumstances, one is always a servant. So one just has to understand their position and understand how the different dynamics within different relationships are working. And this way, creating a very harmonious culture. And when you have a nice, harmonious culture and people are interacting very nicely, then the mind becomes peaceful and people can focus on self-realization and spiritual cultivation. So Krishna is showing that through his own personal example. So it's good enough for Krishna, then it's certainly good enough for us to behave in this way. So this is also part of Vedic culture, is learning some of these subtleties or intricacies of social interaction. So Krishna, obviously being very expert, knows how to behave properly. And upon Narada Muni visiting this assembly house, he worships him very nicely, bathes his feet, because Narada Muni is a travelling sage wandering throughout the whole universe. So Krishna is the... We offer the prayer to Krishna, Namol Brahmanya Devya, that Krishna is has high respect for the Brahmanas. So in this way, Krishna is worshipping Narada Muni very nicely. And says, oh, how are your travels? Where have you come from? And Narada Muni says, oh, I've just come from Indraprastha. So Krishna inquires, oh, how is Maharaj Yudhisthira? How is his sovereignty going? How is his kingdom going? Because Krishna understands that he's the super soul in everybody's heart. Explains that in the Bhagavad Gita, that he's situated in the heart of all living entities. So he knows everything that's going on, past, present and future. He's omniscient. He knows everything. So Krishna understands that Maharaj Yudhisthira is wanting him to go to Indraprastha city to perform this Rajasuya sacrifice. But still he's questioning Narada Muni in this way. So Narada Muni explains that Maharaj Yudhisthira desires for you to come to Indraprastha city so he can perform this Rajasuya sacrifice. So this created a dilemma, as we were reading about just at the end of last chapter. A dilemma is created that the Yadus want to kill Jarasandha, but at the same time, Maharaj Yudhisthira wants Krishna to go to Indraprastha city to perform this Rajasuya sacrifice. So what to do? What to do? So, seemingly Krishna is perplexed. Of course, he's not perplexed. He's behaving as a human being. So he asks Uddhava, "What should I do, Uddhava? What do I do in this position?" We seem to have a dilemma here. On one hand, we need to get rid of Jarasandha. On the other hand, we need to go to Indraprastha city. So, of course, Krishna knows what to do. It's not that he's lacking anything. He has to ask somebody for advice or guidance. He's Atmaram. He's complete. He's self-sufficient. So he's asking Uddhava in order to glorify Uddhava's position. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna isn't sitting on his big throne or his big asana wanting everybody to worship him. Krishna actually wants to give credit to his devotees. It's actually Krishna's gets great pleasure and enjoyment actually more from seeing his devotees being given honour and worship than him receiving it himself. This is Krishna's position. Inconceivable. The Supreme Personality of Godhead takes greater pleasure in seeing his devotees being given respect, honour and worship than receiving it himself. So you can see Krishna makes so many wonderful arrangements for his devotees to be glorified and honoured. Just as we can see with our Srila Prabhupada, that Krishna made such wonderful arrangements for Srila Prabhupada to be given international fame and worship and glorification. Krishna desired that for his pure devotee Srila Prabhupada. It's not that Srila Prabhupada was desiring these things. In fact, Prabhupada on one occasion was in one temple and was being received very nicely. It might have been possibly in Los Angeles temple, a very opulent temple. May not have been, but it was one of the temples in ISKCON at the time. Very, very beautiful, very palatial. Prabhupada has been given great honour and worship and respect. And this is upon one of his arrival addresses, and devotees were worshipping very nicely and performing kirtan. And then Prabhupada called over one of his devotees and said to him, "You see this wonderful building and this great worship going on?" And the devotee is going, "Yes, Prabhupada." And Prabhupada said, "I simply hanker or long just to go back to my rooms in the Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan." I don't know if anybody has been to the Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan. Who's been? You've been to Prabhupada's rooms in the Radha Damodar temple? Yeah, very, very simple. Very, very simple. There's two rooms. There's Prabhupada's room, which he used to use for writing and studying. Very, very simple, very, very small. I know it's probably, probably, what, 8 metres wide, if that, by, 4 metres. It's not a big room at all, very, very simple. Prabhupada would study in there and sleep in there, and then he has his kitchen over the side. Sometimes you might have seen the picture of Prabhupada taking prasadam, and it's a black and white picture, and he's looking at, I think they've got it in crossways actually, is Prabhupada taking prasadam. That's actually in his kitchen at the Radha Damodar temple, and he's looking out at the Samadhi of Rupa Goswami. Because you could see Rupa Goswami's Samadhi from there. So Prabhupada said, "I simply long to go back to my rooms in the Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan." But he said, "But for me, that would be sense gratification." For him, that would be... They're going to say, he's getting this opulent worship, he has a beautiful palatial building, getting respect and honour and worship and so much opulences. And he said, "Simply, I wish to go back to my rooms in Vrindavan at the Radha Damodar temple. But for me, that would be sense gratification." So Prabhupada wasn't attached to these things, but on Krishna's behalf he was accepting this glorification, worship and so forth due to Krishna's arrangement. Krishna wanted Srila Prabhupada to be worshipped, because we see that in the Shastra other people aren't supposed to be worshipped in front of the deity, but every morning we're worshipping Srila Prabhupada. We do Guru Puja for Srila Prabhupada in front of the deities. So Krishna's taking pleasure from this, seeing Srila Prabhupada being worshipped. Krishna is taking great pleasure from this. This is Krishna's position. He likes to see his devotees being worshipped. So we can see with the case of Narada Muni that Krishna is worshipping him very nicely. So when this dilemma is created, he asks Uddhava what to do in order to glorify Uddhava's position and glorify Uddhava's diplomacy and intelligence. So Uddhava comes up with this great transcendental plot. This is what we should do. We should go to Indraprastha on the request of Maharaj Yudhisthira. By going to Indraprastha and performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, what will happen is that the Rajasuya sacrifice can only be performed unless all of the other kingdoms around the world have been subjugated, including Jarasandha. So in this way, if we go to Indraprastha and we subjugate Jarasandha, then all of our purposes will be filled. So this is Krishna's intelligence, that through Uddhava, Krishna was forming this plan in order to get rid of King Jarasandha and at the same time appease Maharaj Yudhisthira by going to Indraprastha city. So this is one of Krishna's qualities called Chakura, which means he's very, very clever. Well, I think we'll read in one of the coming purports that, actually in a previous purport it was, that it's explained that one of Krishna's qualities, explained by Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion, that he's very, very clever. So the definition of clever means somebody who is able to achieve various things just by one activity. So this is one of Krishna's wonderful qualities, that he's very, very clever and he can achieve many, many, many things just through one activity, through one pastime. So we can see in this case, just by him going to see Maharaj Yudhisthira and the Pandavas in Indraprastha, just by doing that, then everything will be satisfied. Because Uddhava explains that by going to perform the Rajasya sacrifice and subjugating all of the kings, then Jarasandha can be killed. So it's Uddhava's plan to kill Jarasandha not through one army but a one-on-one combat, because Jarasandha was very, very, very powerful. When Ramai Swami was here, he was explaining that Jarasandha had a huge army, because at the time so many enemies of Krishna who had been stifled in their efforts to kill Krishna had become very, very envious of him, and many of their friends had been killed by Krishna. So as a result, Jarasandha had assembled this great army of people who were envious of Krishna, this envious army of Krishna. So a very, very powerful army. So Uddhava thought that, well, it's probably better that if we just fight Jarasandha one-on-one instead of trying to fight this whole army. So in this way, he had a plot that Bhima would be able to kill Jarasandha in a one-on-one combat. So also by doing that, then the Rajasya sacrifice could be performed. So you can see that this is one of Krishna's qualities of being clever, that he can achieve so many things just through one activity. In so many of his pastimes, we can see that he's reciprocating with devotees in different ways. The famous pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill, that by Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill, he's protecting all the residents of Vrindavan, but at the same time he's able to become closer to the gopis, because at that time the gopis weren't able to publicly come close to Krishna. So when the Govardhan Hill was being lifted, Krishna's gopis and Radharani were able to look at Krishna holding up this hill on the small finger of his left hand, and Krishna was able to reciprocate with him with his eyes. It's explained that when Radharani was looking at Krishna, Krishna caught her glance in the corner of his eyes and he began shaking. The whole hill began shaking. Krishna became overwhelmed with Radharani's love. And he's holding the hill up and going, and so all the cowards men began, because the hill was up there, and so they took their sticks and were trying to, we'll hold Krishna, we'll be alright. Of course then Krishna explained, he slightly took off the weight of the hill a little bit and the cowards went, oh no, Krishna, you can hold it. Krishna is achieving many wonderful things just through one pastime. There are so many wonderful examples of that. Even with Lord Chaitanya appearing in the material world, we can see the cleverness of, or the intelligence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because we know internally, Krishna wanted to feel the love of Srimati Radha Radharani. Wanted to know what her love was for, and what was it about Krishna that attracts Radharani to him. So these were his internal reasons for coming. So he came internally for that reason, but externally, by him coming to the material world, he's able to establish the Yuga Dham, the Harinam Sankirtan, the chanting of the holy names of Lord Krishna. So you can see, internally, by coming as Lord Chaitanya, he's able to fulfill his desire of understanding Radharani's love for him, and then he's also able to spread the Yuga Dharma simultaneously. So Krishna, through his pastimes, is achieving so many wonderful things. So we're reading here, in the last couple of verses, we're reading about Krishna's wonderful position with all of the Yadu dynasty to come to Indraprastha city, reading all the wonderful descriptions about the chariots and all the wonderful, beautifully adorned ladies of the Yadu dynasty from Dwarka, all of Krishna's beautiful queens from Dwarka, Rukmini, Satyabham, all travelling in procession to come to Indraprastha. So here we're reading about Krishna's arrival in Indraprastha city, and we're reading about the ecstasy and the love that all of the residents of Indraprastha are experiencing, especially the Pandavas. So very, very ecstatic that Yudhisthira finally, after so long, after months, is finally getting to see their supreme worshipful Lord Krishna. Because we know Lord Chaitanya says that in the wonderful prayers he recites, that one moment seems like years. So this is the mood of separation the devotees are experiencing when they're not and Krishna's personal association, that one moment seems like hundreds of years. We can see that the gopis actually curse Lord Brahma for giving them eyelids, because they explain that when their eyelids are blinking, it means that they can't see Krishna for that time their eyelids are blinking. This is the intense love they have for the Supreme Lord, that just by their eyelids blinking, it means that they can't see Krishna. So therefore they curse the creator, Lord Brahma. This is the love of the gopis. So similarly, the Pandavas also have great love and affection for Krishna. So after months and months and months of Krishna leaving them and going to Dwarka, finally they're having Krishna's darshan again. So they're in ecstasy, or in complete ecstasy. Tears are in their eyes, they're embracing the Lord. So much love, so much affection they feel for the Supreme Lord. Krishna is embracing them. Imagine the fortune of the Pandavas being embraced by Krishna, Arjuna being embraced personally by Krishna, or Yudhisthira being embraced by the Lord himself. This is the great mercy of Krishna upon his devotees. So much love and affection. Different ecstasies being experienced by them. And we read the Nectar of Devotion, talks about the different sorts of bhavas that different devotees experience. So all of these bhavas are being experienced here upon seeing Krishna, because when a devotee sees Krishna, different aspects of Krishna's form stimulate different bhavas within the devotee. So Krishna, obviously, outside of Vrindavan in Dwarka, is like Jagannath. Jagannath is in the mood of great kshatriya, great king. So this is the mood of Krishna, and Dwarka is like Jagannath, very, very powerful and opulent. So this form of Krishna invokes ecstatic love of Godhead within some of his devotees. So the residents of Indraprastha experiencing this bhav, or this love of Krishna, and this opulence he's coming in. Because we read about so much opulence that Krishna is travelling to Indraprastha in the mood of a king. So this stimulates this great ecstatic love of all of the inhabitants within Indraprastha city. So upon seeing Krishna, their eyes and their hearts are melted. Great joy and satisfaction they experience within their hearts, completely satisfied. It's even explained to the point that upon hearing Krishna's arrival in Indraprastha city, that the wives left their husbands to go up to the rooftops to take darshan of the Lord. They forgot everything, forgot their families, forgot their husbands, and Krishna's here, let's go see him. Ran up to the rooftops of their houses just to take darshan of the Lord. So this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can attract everybody. All living entities are attracted to the Supreme Lord. This is Krishna's potency as the Supreme Lord. As parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, we're attracted to him. It's actually the most natural thing you can experience, is your attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's only when we come into the material world and our consciousness becomes contaminated that the most lovable object becomes the most detestable object. We actually detest Krishna in the material world because of envy. We're trying to be like Krishna. We want to take his position as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, being the Supreme Enjoyer. So that detest for Krishna is manifested in our detest for chanting his name and our detest for performing devotional service. It comes through our envious nature of Krishna. So when we're in a purified state, we should understand that this attraction and love for Krishna is actually natural. Like Prabhupada would say, it's not an artificial imposition upon the mind at all. That is the most natural thing for the soul to love and be in relationship and serve Krishna. It's the most natural thing. It's not artificial at all. Sometimes people say, oh, you Hare Krishnas, you're just brainwashing people. You're all brainwashed. You're brainwashing people. But Prabhupada would say, yes, we are. We're brain cleaning people. So we're cleaning the consciousness, purifying the consciousness back into its original state. That's all we're doing. That's all Krishna consciousness is. Nothing artificial at all. Very natural. And this love and affection that the Pandavas are experiencing and the residents of Indraprastha are experiencing, that is there for us as well. It's not just it's all very well for them because they're liberated souls and Yudhisthiras and so forth, but Krishna wants us to experience the same love and ecstasy that the Pandavas are experiencing. That is there for us. And Krishna wants that for us as well. That's why Lord Chaitanya has come, for that reason, so we can experience ecstasy. Krishna wants us to be happy, and he wants us to experience the highest form of happiness, but not in the material world. Krishna says, don't try and find your happiness in this material world. Ahisam spasa ja bhoga dukha yonia evite. That is temporary. It is very foolish to think that happiness is based on sensual pleasure, that through your body and senses being stimulated and satisfied that you'll find happiness. Now Krishna says, forget it, just give up that whole idea and give up that whole concept of trying to find happiness and pleasure in the material world. It's just not there. In fact, there is a higher happiness, there is a higher pleasure, and I want that happiness and I want that pleasure for you. And this is why Lord Chaitanya has come, to give us that happiness and give us that pleasure, to distribute the fruits of love of Godhead without discrimination. without discrimination to everybody and anybody. Even though we're in Kali Yuga, it's such a fallen time, Lord Chaitanya's mercy is so magnanimous that he has come to give it to everybody. That's why we worship Lord Chaitanya as Namol Mahavadananya, the most magnanimous incarnation, because he's freely distributing love of Godhead to everybody. So Srila Prabhupada, understanding that mood of Krishna and that mood of Lord Chaitanya, wanting all of the jivas and conditioned souls to give up their attachment to the material world and attain the higher happiness of the spiritual dimension, then Prabhupada established this Sankirtan movement. And obviously the prime, you could say, idea behind that Sankirtan movement is Harinam and also book distribution. So during this marathon time, Prabhupada established this marathon even when he was physically present, where he wanted all the devotees to go out and profusely distribute the mercy to as many conditioned souls as possible. So this is Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada's mercy upon us, that we have an opportunity to go out and spread this mercy during the marathon time, whether it's in the form of Harinam or in prasadam distribution or in book distribution. So this is very much so in the mood of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada, going out and giving this mercy to the conditioned souls so they can understand what is the highest pleasure, what is the highest happiness. Because all of us are seeking pleasure. You can't stop seeking pleasure. It's just that people are looking for pleasure in the wrong places. And sometimes people think the Hare Krishna movement is about giving everything up. You give up the material world, give it all up. But actually devotees are the most intelligent and the most clever, because we're just looking for the highest pleasure and the highest satisfaction and the highest happiness. That's all. So Prabhupada has made such a wonderful arrangement. As we'll explain, Krishna is clever, and through one activity he achieves many, many, many goals are achieved through one activity. So Srila Prabhupada, also being very intelligent, God-given intelligence through Krishna, has made an arrangement where such a wonderful activity can go on for book distribution. So the devotees who immerse themselves more and more in the activity of book distribution and preaching and outreach activity can experience ecstasy, and also they're giving the opportunity to the conditioned souls to also experience that ecstasy as well. So such a wonderful arrangement through distributing books and just prasadam and through Harinam. So very, very, very wonderful. And in this way, the ocean of ecstasy increases. The anandam buddhi vadanam. Lord Chaitanya says through Shashastakam, is an increasing ocean of transcendental ecstasy. Anandam buddhi vadanam. So this anandam buddhi vadanam, this ocean of ecstasy, can be experienced by everybody. And the more one immerses himself in that mood of Lord Chaitanya and giving that mercy out, the ecstasy actually increases more and more and more and more. So a very, very wonderful arrangement. So Krishna is very, very intelligent and very, very clever. So hearing very wonderful descriptions of Krishna's arriving in Indraprastha and the love and affection that all these devotees are feeling for him. And we will continue to read on tomorrow, building up to this wonderful pastime of the Rajasur sacrifice. It's one of my favourite pastimes, the Rajasur sacrifice. Very, very relishable pastime. Everything goes on there. Krishna is glorified. Shishupala is killed in the lead up to it. Jarasandha is also killed as well. There's a wonderful fight between Bhima and Jarasandha. So a lot of ecstasy in the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is Anandam Buddhi Vadanam. So we'll stop there and ask if there's any questions or points at all from what we were talking about. Yes. The Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami, gives a gives a transition of different stages of bhakti yoga. So it begins with shraddha. It has to begin with faith. So everything begins with faith. So there has to be some degree of faith there, that there is more to us than just the body, that we're a spirit, soul, and so forth. And then from that shraddha, that will bring us into devotee association, the sadhu sangha. And through associating with the devotees, we get instruction about how to engage in sadhana. So through that sadhana, we come to a nata nivritti, which removes all the doubts, misgivings, and so forth, the bad things in the mind which create doubts through sadhana. So it's especially through sadhana and through association that our shraddha becomes deeper and deeper. And then through anatta nivritti, purifying the heart of all the unwanted anattas, then we come to nishta, which is steady, in our practice of devotional service. And through that steadiness, we develop the ruchi of taste, and then through ruchi comes the bhava. So it begins with association and through sadhana, vajana kriya, devotional service. So yeah, initially it may be just some intellectual understanding that yes, Krishna is the supreme and I'm not the body, but that has to come to the platform of just being theory to realisation, and that realisation comes through association, hearing and chanting, especially reading and asking questions and so forth, and rendering service. Then we start developing a taste. Yeah, so it's not a intellectual adjustment we have to make to experience these bhavas, but it's through devotional service it will come. Through Krishna's mercy, he'll give it to you. Yeah. You have read Nectar of Devotion? No, you should read Nectar of Devotion. Yeah, it's the whole science of Bhakti Yoga. Well worth reading. Yeah. I'm not sure if you check in the shop if we have any copies of it. I know the BBT don't have any available at the moment, but if you see in the shop upstairs, and Sava Mangala Mataji may have some in the shop, but it's well worth reading. Yeah. I'm sure one of the book distributors would love to give you it. Kripanapurna Mataji will give you it. Any more questions or points at all? Does anyone, this is a question, is any of the devotees here working with Jagannath Ram who are distributing books at the moment, or have got books off him? He's handed the scores in, I think it was yesterday, so we can read the scores out tomorrow, and for Radha Balabha's pleasure. Thank you for doing book distribution. Keep going. You put Prabhupada into ecstasy, and Lord Chaitanya into ecstasy. He'll give you special mercy for doing that. Is there any more questions or points at all?
If we've got up to a lot of nonsense in the past, on your journey, like, have you found that you've just kind of like forgotten it, or is it that you you understand, like, enough? Not affected by those actions because
you're referring to the impressions in the mind? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, sometimes we'll explain that when we are a new devotee. The example given, you might have heard the analogy of when you sweep the floor. You've heard that example? Yeah. The dust is on the floor, you sweep. Yeah, so yeah, when you chant Hare Krishna, then sometimes you may get dreams or funny thoughts and so forth. It's because the chanting is purifying the heart, so these things are in the consciousness getting cleansed out. So you shouldn't be surprised if these things are there. Yeah. Like, oh, where are these horrible thoughts coming from? Where do they come from? Yeah. Or you have a bad dream or something. It's because the chanting is purifying the heart, so the dust is coming up to the surface again.
Yeah, you purify. All these thoughts come up, just keep chanting.
Keep chanting, yeah. Just tolerate. They'll go away. They do go away with the time. Yeah. Now, Krishna says that he's a source of knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Krishna can take those bad impressions away from you. But just keep chanting, become purified, focus on Krishna, and keep serving Krishna, and all the anattas and the things in the heart will be cleansed away. It does take time. It's not just this lifetime. I understand you've got many, many, many lifetimes. So it's not just the one lifetime you're purifying. It's many lifetimes. Things going on in your mind you can't even remember you've done in previous lifetimes. So all these things are being purified. That's the potency of bhakti yoga, is that it not only removes the karmas, the reactions you're supposed to get, but also it removes the desire within the heart to perform sinful activity as well. So it goes right to the root of the problem. Not just, it's called prayaschitta, it doesn't just atone you for your sinful activities, but also it will take those desires away from your heart altogether. So it's the power of bhakti. Yeah. So you should expect there should be some disturbances, but the process is very, very powerful and it does work. Very, very purifying. But just give it time. Be patient. Yeah. Be patient. Any more questions or points at all? Kantra Shima Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gopa Premi.